I'm Halcyon, and welcome to Hug Nation. Today I got a bunch of things I want to talk about. Let's see, what are some of the things? Today I'm still in the, I would say, up until this morning, I've been telling everyone that I am still 80% at Burning Man. I'm still involved in so many conversations, so many stories that are coming back to me, so much that's happening in terms of my playa experiences, my playa energy. I've been producing and making videos. I've got one video that I want to make sure that I let everybody know is going to be live as soon as this video is over. It is called the most important Burning Man video on the internet. The most important Burning Man video on the internet. Yes, I'm very passionate about this. It includes clips from some old stuff that I'd done, some new stuff, all edited into something that I'm very proud of, and I really hope that you will watch, and if you're too familiar with the content, at least share, because I'm feeling very called to share this information, and you'll see. It's all about getting the passion and the people that we are when we're among community at Burning Man and other places. It's about motivating one another to be that year-round and why it's important for ourselves, for the world, and some thoughts to kind of, you know, recalibrate us. And I think that if you're watching right now, if you're part of the Hug Nation tribe, then you get this. The whole point of Hug Nation is to have a weekly reminder and a recalibration to your highest self. At least that's what I think of it as. Maybe it's more of a narcissistic attempt to turn my life into a narrative or make a hero's journey out of the mundane. But I don't know. What's the difference? But I think that we know people. We are interacting with people who are probably not as passionate or not as putting the efforts in to being their highest selves year-round, to being one who gifts, one who is open-hearted, one who is vulnerable, one who is loving. And so while we push to be that in ourselves and why we find whatever practices and reminders on a daily basis and on a weekly basis like this, I made this video because I really want us to evangelize more. Part of, I think, the warrior's path in the modern world is to shine our light and in the most humble of ways possible, encourage others to shine theirs. Is that possible? Well, I guess we'll do it in the humblest ways if possible. And maybe not so humble. I'll say it. Not so humble at times. Have I not made that clear? All right. So, I went to the coolest theme party that I've ever been to this weekend. And I'll explain why. The theme was, we're getting old. And so, the idea was to dress up, you know, like embrace it and really, you know, dress up as your old self. So people spray painted their hair white, and people had walkers, and we wore outfits that, everything from the funny older outfits of like leisure suits of the 70s to some people will have thought about like, what would I look like? What would I dress like when I was older? And it was, at first I was like, you know, is this ageism? You know, are we making fun of old people? And I was like, it doesn't feel that way. It feels like we are embracing ourselves in our older selves. And so it kind of took some of the dangerous aspects of certain theme parties, certain, you know, dress up in certain themes or certain dress up days at school. It's like, ooh, no, you can't do cowboys and Indians anymore. Ooh, no, you can't do that. Ooh, toga party. Careful. There's a lot of themes that danger into cultural appropriation or insensitivity with other cultures. But you old is your culture. It's just you in a different place in your timeline. And so that was one part that made it fun. You could really, and people went off. Like if you went to this party and you were not dressed up, it was awkward. I'll say it. If you were there and you were just walking around, I mean, people actually would make fun of you. They're like, oh my goodness, you haven't changed a bit. What are you eating? Oh my goodness, you look you look phenomenal. And so when we got there, the host and hostess, the hostess of the party, she dressed up like a naughty nurse. So there were a number of people that were like naughty nurses, and that was men and women in like super sexy nurse outfits. And then everyone else was residents of the old people home. And so we got there and they checked you in. They asked you all these questionnaires and took your picture and gave you a name tag. I chose to be Leonard. And for some reason, I stayed in character until 4 a.m, where I was using a walker. I was doing like improv stand-up in my old Jewish man voice, which, you know, my grandpa was an old Jewish man, not Grandpa Caleb, Grandpa John. And so I'd be like, what's your name? And like, Sonny, come here. I want to introduce something. I'm like, what? My son's here. Who's here? And we just kept having fun with it. And then as the night got into the 3-4 o'clock in the morning, then it was kind of awesome to have a walker as you're walking around the party. So, and they had, you know, candies and little cups they would hand out, and it was so much fun. So, bravo to Heidi and Shoghi for hosting an incredible party, and bravo to all the participants who embraced it wholeheartedly in appearance and demeanor. I mean, the dance floor was filled with people like this, with walkers, going, holding their canes up and stuff. So, you know, all I'm saying is, bravo. It was fun. It was fun enough that I wanted to share it with you and tell you about this gathering. And the other thing about the theme that was really beautiful was that it put you sometimes into the perspective of final chapter of life. So even as we're having fun, I was involved with so many conversations about aging and about dying and about our grandparents. Told stories about my grandpa all night long. Talked about death with a number of people. And death was on people's minds, you know, because of things that happened at this year's Burning Man. And I talked to people who this year's Burning Man, as well as this theme party, had brought to front of mind stories and experiences that they had around death that had either been healing or challenging, or some of them that were unresolved. And so even within all of this whimsy, we were having this opportunity to really go deep. It was beautiful. And it, you know, lately I've just so much had my grandpa on my mind. The video that I'm putting online right now that I hope you watch, the most important Burning Man video on the internet, is really mostly about my grandpa and about how he was this example of how when you live your life according to your ideals, then you are wealthy. And when it comes time for your life to get close to the end, you are in a place of joy and fearlessness, and that what we need to push ourselves to do is be our highest selves on a daily basis, because the what you get in return for that is that peace, is that knowledge that my grandpa demonstrated at end of life of the result of a year or a lifetime of ripples of love coming back to you by the end of your life is something so profound that no amount of money, no amount of prestige, nothing that you can acquire in life will come close to the rewards of a life well lived. So, speaking of my ancestors, I had an experience this year at the Burning Man Temple that was profound. I went out there with a number of things that I knew that I needed to do. I had a copy of the book that I'd just written that I knew that I wanted to burn. It's filled with all sorts of stories and some stories that I'm afraid of sharing, and I have a bunch of fear about what would happen if people knew, what would happen if my family was hurt, or people in the stories were offended or hurt. and which is why I haven't decided yet if or when I'll ever share it and make it public. But whether I share it or not, I wanted to release this fear. And so I had brought a copy of my book that I wanted to burn. I brought a piece of fabric that was used as a cleanup rag during a sexual experience that I had many months ago that was done during my birthday as part of a sexual ritual. That actually the intention of this multi-person experience was as a ritual to reclaim some of my lost sexual power, with the intention that the result of this experience would be this rag, this ornate rag that I created for this occasion, would months later be brought and burned in the temple. So I had this sacred rag. I had my book. I had a piece of paper that many months ago I had during a meditation had this like thing in my throat that I coughed up this like, I felt like, don't swallow this. I just had this thought like, don't swallow that. Get that out. That needs to come out of you, like a purge. And so I found a piece of paper and I spit this into the paper. And so I wrote on the piece of paper, shaman spit. And I said, I have to bring this and burn it ceremoniously at some point. And so I brought that to the burn, to burn this item that came from another place that was supposed to be purged from me. So I went to the temple with these items that I knew that I had to ceremoniously release to fire. And I got to the temple middle of the day. I waited outside for a while. It's these grueling hot days, and then waited till I kind of felt called to go inside. Wow, so crazy. Picturing it makes me like tear up. If you're not familiar with the Burning Man temples, it was not a part of the event initially, but it's been around for over 10 years now. Initially started by David Best, but now other artists will submit ideas. And it is a place for us to bring our own meaning. But predominantly it is a place where people leave memories of people they've lost, parts of themselves they want to release. But it is something that it is a sacred place created by Burning Man that becomes sacred by what we bring to it. And as it fills with messages on the raw wood over the course of the week, written messages and pictures from people, it becomes the most spiritually powerful place in the world, I believe, that I've ever experienced. And so I walked inside and took in the structure that was gorgeous, and took a while looking at memories of other people and faces of people lost, and then finally found a place that felt like that's where I was supposed to sit. And I got down on my knees and faced the wall, and then was called to just, after I stared there for a minute or two, I was just called to put my head down on kneel. Wow, it's so... As soon as I put my head to the ground, I suddenly went and visited or spent time with each of my grandparents, and I spent time with Grandma Ann, and I could smell her.
Chanel perfume, and I could hear her laughing. I could see her so vividly, like she was with me, and I couldn't stop laughing, and I was crying and laughing, like on the ground, just crying and laughing. It was so awesome. And then I spent time with Grandpa John, and I could see him and hear him laughing at the table as we're eating his pot roast, and I'm laughing and I'm crying. And then I spent time with Grandma Carol. And I could feel all of her handiwork and sewing all around her, and smell her in the kitchen. And I spent time with Grandpa Caleb. And I'm just on the ground crying and laughing, just snot and tears just like pooling around my face. And I bet if somebody was watching me, I bet they were like, wow, he is having such a hard time. But I was having such an amazing experience. And then it was gone. And I got up, and I was looking around, and I was like, oh, I should have known that I should have brought a tissue, you know, like I got snot all over me. And I kind of look around like, is there anyone around me that I can ask for help? Because I'm just like covered in snot right now. And I was like, oh, I've got this piece of paper that I need to purge. I've got this paper of shaman spit. So I take this piece of paper, I go, and I clean myself up, and I gain my composure, and then I just was called, and I took this piece of paper that now has all this purged stuff from me, and I just shoved it into the crack of the temple. And it was like, whew. I was like, whoa. That was exactly how that was supposed to happen. And then I have my book. And the book copy that I made, I just printed a few copies of it. And the cover of it is this cool picture of me naked like Atlas holding the world. And it's kind of, and the book's got a title on it. It's got my name all big. And I'm like, that would look really cool to have that in the temple as people after me the next few days as they walked by and they saw my book there. It would look cool to have that picture up. And people would wonder like, whoa, what's he burning? And oh, he wrote a book. So I'm holding the book. And the other side of the book, the back of the book, has got a bunch of pictures, memories from chapters of my life. And I intentionally, some of the pictures are pictures like me on a mountaintop and traveling, but there's also pictures of me during certain work, like with like booth girls and with models and some like women in sexy clothes. And it's kind of shallow. At least the images themselves could be interpreted. So the stories, I think, are deep. The pictures are shallow. And certainly would not be as, I wouldn't be as proud to have that on display in the temple. And so I sat with it, and I was thinking about the stories and about the fear about sharing, about the love of my path, and about releasing. And then I just waited till I was called to, and then I went, and I took the book, and I shoved it into a place that just felt right. And then I sat back down, and I looked at the book, and it was back front first. It was, instead of the big, cool picture of me, it was all these tiny pictures that I was less proud of. Like, oh, that was perfect. There's no ego there. This is the way that was supposed to happen. Not as something to make me look good, but as a honest, genuine gesture of release. So then I sat for a second more and was like, okay, I'm done. And I just got up, walked outside, and then I was like, oh crap, I forgot to leave my tapestry ornate rag. So walked back inside the temple, went to this area that I had left these kind of like, you know, crumpled and items. And then I took this beautiful piece of fabric and I kind of, that was the final piece of all of this release. And I left that there, completing this ritual that was started on my birthday in May, finishing it, and then walked out and left. And was like, whew, so light, so like a shell. I felt people outside, there were people that came up to me and spoke to me, and I gave, I hugged a few people, but like, I was barely there. The ego, the halcyon, was barely a part. It was a beautiful feeling. As I was riding back to camp through the open playa, and I was reflecting on these experiences, it was like, this is such a perfect example of radical ritual. Every part of my experience there was uniquely mine. I came to the temple and it was what I needed. I created these rituals. I followed my spirit to be called to do and to feel whatever I was supposed to. I did not follow any old tradition, any dogma, nothing wrong with old traditions if they resonate with you. But to me, this radical ritual theme and Burning Man is so much about creating the rituals, creating the traditions out of inspiration, out of a true heart calling. And that's, I just had this profound example of that, of these moments of heart expression, spirit expression, that were so significant to me and sprung forth from someplace, I don't know. So these radical rituals left me so purged, so free, so connected to my ancestry and to my core self, so aligned with my deep spirit, as opposed to the egoic self that I struggle with. When I say I struggle with, meaning not, oh, I struggle with it. Like, no, that's what life and being a human is about, is that struggle. Remembering your divine oneness and then forgetting it into the ego self. Remembering the divine oneness, forgetting into the ego self. Falling into love, slipping into fear. Falling into love, slipping into fear. So to everyone who, all the builders and the artists and the visionaries and the laborers and all the temple guardians, all the rangers, all of the people that came to the temple and brought their passions and their hearts and their sorrow and their joy, everyone who contributed to making that space so gorgeous, so magic, so healing, I am so deeply grateful for the opportunity to be a part, to heal, to reconnect with the unexplainable and the magic. Thank you. I love you. One topic that has been on everyone's mind, or not so much everyone's mind, but has been filling the message boards and the gripe lists of everyone post-Burning Man, has been bicycles. There was a picture of a bunch of bicycles that were left. And so suddenly, the new topic that everyone wanted to talk about was how terrible we all are about leaving no trace, and how these thousands of bicycles were left, and how we suck, and we should create all these crazy rules to eliminate this problem. Now, I will say this. This is a problem, and we should deal with it. As always, should we make a problem into the theme of the event No, we should make a list of the things we can do better. We should find ways to enculturate better, and we should educate people more. Here are some things we should know about bicycles. You should bring a bike. You should find a way to bring a bike. If you're flying in, there's all sorts of ways that you can still arrange to have a bike, whether it is by renting it, whether it is by buying one and arranging to leave it someplace that wants it afterwards, whether by finding someone to bring it in, by buying it from one of the places that sells it on the way in. Having a bike is an important part about Burning Man. Now, if you are decided that I do not want a bike or I will not make any of these efforts, there are some options. You can borrow one from a campmate, or there is a yellow bike program, which is actually made up of green bikes. I won't comment on whether I thought that was a clever enough idea to counteract the confusion of the yellow bike program. So the way the yellow bike program works, it's based on something that has been a part of certain European cities where there's all these bicycles that are free to use, with the understanding that you, if it's available, you can use it and you can drive it someplace, and then when you get off it, it's not yours anymore. And the idea is it's kind of similar to what we're headed towards with a driverless car program, where you just have all these cars in flow, and once you release them, then the system just allows people to step in and they become much more efficient and effective. So the yellow bikes or the green bikes, you can, if it's available, it's yours to use. When you get off it, it's not yours to use. You can't decorate it, you can't lock it, you gotta wear pants when you wear them. You gotta wear pants when you ride them. Those seem like they're simple rules, but people steal them. They acquire them and lock them and start treating them like they're their bikes. And I've been blown away with the number of people that don't understand how wrong this is and how the system breaks down. People are like, well, yeah, but if I ride a bike all the way out to Open Playa to go dancing at Mayan Warrior, I need the bike to get back. And I'm like, no, not a yellow bike, because that's not how it works. You can't say, well, you know, I need, when if I go all the way across Playa and I get thirsty, I need water, so I'm going to take it out of someone else's cooler. Like, no, not unless, no, that's not how the system works. You bring enough water. And if you need a bike to get back, then you borrow one. Or you wait until another yellow bike is available to go back. Or you wait till there's an ARC car. You don't get to adjust a system because it doesn't work for you. So in front of our camp, people would lock up yellow bikes all the time. And so we would take bolt cutters and free them. I saw people, they would hide them. I had a little like sneak way to get to my RV through the boundaries of Pinkhart. And people would like hide yellow bikes in there. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I would take them out into the front to release them, to free them. You can't enslave a bicycle because it is more efficient for you to have slaves. Ugh. So another part about the bike system is bring a bike or use a yellow bike correctly or borrow a bike or walk or get on ARC cars. And if you bring a bike, bring it home. There are places that you can drop them off that want them. People that will, you know, clean them up and get them to charity or sell them back to burners the next year. But what you can't do is just leave it there and let it be DPW's and other people's problem. The argument comes up like, well, all of those bikes, a lot of them were probably ones that were stolen and then left there, which is another part of the things that we need to know about bikes, is that it's really a great idea to lock up your bike. If you would be bummed that your bike was stolen, lock up your bike. And usually all that means is lock up the wheel so someone can't ride away on it. And it's one of those unfortunate things within the Burning Man community that, you know, there's all the things I've talked about are kind of really standout examples of things we can do better at as a community. we have to lock up our bikes because we have theft. That's a glaring look at why we're not utopia. We are a self-correcting system. I'll say that again. We are not utopia. Burning Man is not utopia. It is a self-correcting system. And so as we notice things that we can get better at, we get better at them. We find solutions. We try new things. We keep sanding down. And then, a new problem. Sand that down. Excuse me. But even within all of these things that we can be better about with bicycles, and it's kind of fascinating, there's so many aspects of bicycles that are become the rough edges that we need to sand down. It's, again, important to remember, that is one piece. That is one aspect of this glorious city, this glorious community. And we should give time to the things we can get better at, but not make it the theme of our experience. Don't let a little bit of darkness distract you from all the light. So, thanks for being good citizens and helping educate and being good stewards of bike etiquette and educating people and not letting people that are around you break these rules. If you have a friend that is locking up a yellow bike, don't let them do that. Make sure they don't do that. If you see someone locking up a yellow bike, call them out. Make a big deal so that other people come in and let people know, whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, if you educate someone, they go, oh, I'm sorry. Perfect. And educate someone kindly. Don't come in guns blazing saying, and create a fight. Don't create a controversy or a conflict that someone immediately, instinctively has to defend themselves from. Make it into a possible learning opportunity, a growth opportunity, a place for the city to self-correct and get better. And then if they are resistant and they dig in and they fight you on it, then slip a little bit more into the more aggressive and shame-projecting tactics that sometimes we use as a community. But let's not start there. Oh my gosh, it's so late! And yet it's right on time. Isn't that the beauty of it all? Also, I guess, don't lock your bicycle to art. Don't lock a bicycle to another person's bicycle, unless you're with somebody and that's your plan. Don't lock your bicycle to the trash fence. We'll just keep getting better, won't we? Ta-da! All right, so let's have a hug. So wherever you are right now, grab yourself by the shoulders. And what a gift to be alive in this moment, to have consciousness and this body. And as we observe this body and its ability to give a sensation and taste and touch and feels, we are grateful. And we're also grateful for the feelings and the thoughts, all this drama of being a human being, of being a conscious entity. We appreciate the thoughts, these identities, these personalities that give so much richness to the adventure of life. And then as we squeeze this physical thing and we recognize this emotional presence, we squeeze deeper, we acknowledge deeper to the energy that flows through us, to the raw consciousness, to the light and love that shines through us and through everyone. And we recognize we are a single beam shining forth from something unknowably large, each of us a tiny piece of the whole, each of us representative of the whole, each of us a cell in the cosmic organism. And so let's breathe together as three breaths as this one, inhaling through the nose. Pause, then out through the mouth. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors,
Happy Hug Nation. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being you.